Hello, Joel here. I've got a new book out. It's called Be Funny or Die: How Comedy Works and Why It Matters. And it's about how comedy works and why it matters. Why human beings tell jokes, and then what that tells us about being human beings. So if you're a human being and you enjoy laughing and then want to know what the hell's going on with that, it's probably a pretty good book to read. It's called Be Funny or Die. It's in shops. You can buy it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cheese and Pickle. Hello, this is Comfort Blanket and I'm Joel Morris. I'm going to be talking to someone who makes cool stuff that I like about some warm stuff that they like. A book or a TV show or a film or a record they go back to again and again for comfort. This time I'm talking to the comedy producer Ed Morrish. Ed produced all of John Finnemore's Souvenir programme. He used to work on the News Quiz. He's done stuff with Mark Steele and Paul Sinner. He's done documentaries with Lem Sisse. But he's mainly a massive sport fan. And that's really annoying, because I don't like sport. Anyway, Ed decided that what he was going to bring on to Comfort Blanket was something to do with balls, and I glazed over. And his job is to get me to the end of this show without throwing him off for bringing sport onto Comfort Blanket. I mean, good luck. Hello, Ed.
Hey, Joel.
Hello. You've come here to talk about something which I know loads about. I'm really comfortable with this one. This is right in my wheelhouse, this one. Tell the boys and girls what you have chosen to talk about as your comfort blanket.
My comfort blanket is Ben Stokes' innings at Headingley in 2019 against Australia in the Ashes. And more broadly, all sport.
I mean, it was the other side, but God, what a goal. Good goal, sir!
This is great, because what's lovely about that is as you rattled that off, and I wanted you to rattle that off, I grew up in a house where there was a lot of sport going on. My dad wrote about sport and was a sub-editor on sports papers and things. So ambient sport was in my house to the extent that when someone rattles off something like that, I feel very, very confident and I don't know why.
It's an absolute picture, isn't it? The sun beating down now.
Beautiful day.
Crowds. Not a seat to be had anywhere.
Packed house.
Yeah, absolutely packed. And the grass looking so lovely.
Green as anything.
Green as you like. Absolutely as green as could be.
Because I don't like sport and have no interest in sport, and it didn't pass on to me. I have no feeling for it or love of it or anything. But when people rattle off like Wisden-esque statistics or like the names of football teams, it's got that sort of teleprinter comfort to me going, ah, sports results. Grandstands on.
James Alexander Gordon.
Yeah.
Manchester United 2. Arsenal 3.
Hull Paragraph 5, Portsmouth Bubble Jet 1. Sheffield Hysterical 3, Chunky Norwich 1.
And I think you don't have to like sport to like the sort of Robin Bailey as the Brigadier kind of reeling off gorgeous stories of W.G. Grace.
Strawberry! English cream! Creamy! England! Cream!
The most cream of all England!
I think there's something comforting in the sound of it, even if you don't know anything about sport.
Well, it's stopped raining. Players back on the lawn.
The first rivers on the left arm of it are the Wills of Brings.
Yes.
But very nice for the two elders over, Bob.
I did a series called Chain Reaction. It's a 6-part series, and in week one, person A interviews person B, in week two, person B interviews person C. And Mark Steele interviewed Barry Davies, the commentator. He's a lovely man. And he had this fantastic story about John Arnott, the cricket commentator, who is also fantastically bitchy at times. And someone said, and as the ball disappears to the boundary and the sun sets in the west... And John Arlott said, and of course, if the sun sets anywhere other than the west, we'll let you know. But it's just the sound of that.
Well left. Well played. Well. Well played.
At my wedding, the party, Carrie Quinlan DJ'd at my wedding reception, and she played Soul Limbo by Booker T and the MGs.
Fantastic, which is the cricket music.
The cricket music. You hear that, you're about to hear cricket.
Yeah.
And there's just something... It's like, there's something... I mean, there's a reason you can't get rid of it. I remember when I was on the BBC Radio Comedy, there was a conversation, does the news quiz theme need updating? Well, whatever you put there is go... Like, if you changed it every year, fine.
Yeah.
But no, because it's been on air since 1976.
There's associations with it. And I think the funny thing about sport... As someone, if you love sport and you love the story of sport, we should talk about sport as narrative and things. There is a narrative and a drama to sport. But I think there's also an ambient comfort, I mean, for me, in the comfort other people get from sport.
Still, it won't give the score. It'll just say match result or England score latest.
What if it doesn't for once? What if it says England victory or England flop or Ramsey men shaken by Bulgars?
Maybe in the way that people who don't like music don't mind other people enjoying music. And I think that there's something similar there. And I totally appreciate the enormous comfort and sense of stability that people get from following sport with a proper attention.
When I listen to classical music... Don't know much about classical music, but I know what I like. And people go, oh, well, of course, you want this recording. And I'll listen to it and I go, well, what's...
Yeah.
I need someone. You know, you want that Radio 3 show, the classic thing, the listening service. You want someone to go, right, the reason this is better is you're looking for that. It was like, I never got Elvis until this box set came out of his Vegas shows that it was called The Way It Is. And there's a version of You Lost That Loving Feeling.
Yeah.
And there's just one moment where it makes me just feel like crying.
You try hard not to show it, but baby, I know it.
And the way it goes, baby! And it's just like, it went straight through me. And I was like, that is what my dad heard.
Yes.
The thing he'd never heard before.
Yes.
That made them go, oh, this is new. Whereas, because, you know, I was born in 1979, so Elvis has been dead 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's just part of the ambience. I don't get what's special about it.
You need a broker. And I was about to say this because I watched this innings. My wife went, what are you watching in there? I said, what's happening? She went, you're cheering. And I went, I don't know what's going on, but it's really exciting. So I could sense it. But some of that was coming through the fact that there were commentators.
Thunders it back down the ground for four, I think. Yes, it is. This is incredible. Keep your cool, Ben. 9 to win. You're on the brink of greatness.
That it was given context, and you'd recommended it. So I went, turned on to the idea that this is something special. So I'll look out for something special. And with a lot of sport, even if you're not a sports fan, there are people, there are the John Arlotts and the Barry Davies, who will help you understand what's exciting about it.
Well, you don't see this often. 11 a.m. and it's full here at Headingley.
When I did go and see cricket as a kid, there was the cricket ground, so I'd go and see county games. And I never really fell in love with it, but we'd have the radio on. And I'd watch it with a picnic and a friend and a beer, and we'd watch it. And these people would explain what was going on. And there was a broker there who helped me understand what was exciting about what I was watching.
I think also, I mean, in the case of that heading the innings, it's the crowd. I mean,
there's so much of it.
Commentators, you know, there's that bit where Mark Nicholas goes...
He's gone again! He's gone again!
No way, man. Just Ben Stokes is doing things that should not be possible.
Yes, it is astonishing.
So statistically improbable. And so it's that sort of crowd thing, which I think sport on TV often doesn't give you because you're just watching it, the crowd sanitised.
Watching this innings,
watching the crowd, occasionally they'd go to slow motion. The slow motion would be of the crowd's reaction rather than the actual event.
Well, it's certainly creating a buzz around this ground. It's Colosseum-like, I'd say.
And you're being led constantly, in the same way as you are by an audience reaction in comedy, to be part of a collective experience of all feeling the same sense of anticipation and release. And I think watching it, especially because you're a comedy producer and you work a lot with live audiences, I watched this and went, oh, that's what it's got in common with comedy. It's collective, and you're all riding the same roller coaster at the same time.
The noise is deafening. It's all for that man.
Maybe you should tell the story of this innings, because it is, even as a non-cricket fan, or a very cricket casual person, I went, God, that's brilliant.
I'll explain it, and I imagine...
Can you explain it?
I can explain it.
Good!
And he'd possibly do it single-handedly.
We've done a shortcut here, but you just explained to me that an explanation you once made of how good this innings was won you an award. So I've got high expectations of what's coming next. Can you do an award-winning explanation of why this Ben Stokes innings is amazing?
Okay, I'm going to preface this, having thought about it. A lot of people will switch off early because cricket is quite a complicated game with, you know, 10 methods of dismissal.
You say complicated, I say stupid.
Takes 5 days. Well, there's a lot of... they don't have rules, they have laws. It's like this lot. And if I start going, well, of course, you know, at the start of the day, England were 156 for three, needing 203 runs to it. Like, a lot of people switch off, right?
Yes.
So what I'm... The point is about this innings. I think what it did narratively is it reduced the game to simplicity.
Yes.
It reduced it to this is your last chance.
Yeah.
So what happens is England start the day. This is the fourth day. There's another day to go if the game doesn't match today. So there's 2 days.
Yeah.
Statistically, you know that means there's going to be a result because it's very rare that you keep all your wickets for 2 days. It's very rare that you would not score 200 runs in two.
So we should make this clear to people who don't know cricket, maybe foreign people, that cricket is a game that can go on for many, many days and not end.
Well, there were actually some things in the 1940s, 50s called the timeless tests where they didn't put an end point on it.
They're still playing those now.
They're still playing, yeah, they're still going. And this is before we even get to the difference between a draw and a tie.
Don't. We won't go there. Right, we'll say this is going to finish.
Yes. So England's best batsman, Joe Root, is at the crease. Ben Stokes is an all-rounder, which means he bats and bowls. He's good at both. The traditional mark of an all-rounder is, do you take a wicket for every 30 runs you give away, and do you get 30 runs for your batting on average? So, you know, he's a very good cricketer, but every time he gets more than 50, you're not expecting too much more from
him. Perfect character to follow.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Right. So Joe Root, who's the captain at this point. Yeah, he's the captain and our best batsman, statistically England's best batsman for years, and also one of the most exciting best batsmen to watch. He is out after 5 overs.
Just it!
Yeah! Out. The inside edge. The skipper's gone just before the second new ball. What a breakthrough for Australia. And with that, is it the Ashes?
But you see, he'd already scored some runs. So you start going, well, and here comes Johnny Bairstow. And Johnny Bairstow is my favourite cricketer. He is... This match is happening at Headingley in Leeds, which is near where I grew up. He is the son of a former Leeds and England batsman who, you know, sort of Johnny has followed in, despite the fact his dad took his own life when Johnny was young. And his first century on home soil, I think, was at Headingley.
There's history,
there's history,
stories.
There's family, emotion. And then he just starts... swiping the ball.
Fine stroke. Yorkshire crowd are going to love that from one of their own.
That's all playing beautifully. He gets out and he appeals it and they do a replay and they show that he didn't.
Well, this is good from Bairstow. You can see it in his eyes. He's fancying this. He's just got to continue to stay in his bubble. Keep waiting for the right balls to hit.
And so he's playing well and then he gets caught behind.
Oh, that is out though. No question. That's a huge moment.
And then this is about, so that's 27 overs in.
With the Ashes on the line, this was the partnership England were looking towards.
Then England start collapsing because you're getting to the players who are less good at batting.
Yes.
That's just, you know, you start with two players who aren't necessarily your best players, but like can defend the ball a lot.
Yeah.
What you're looking to do is to wear the ball out. The ball has to be used for 80 overs. That's 80 sets of 6 balls. And then they can change it for a new one.
Right.
So... you know, you want someone who can just not get out. And then once the ball gets old, once it gets a bit beaten up, it starts not coming down as fast. You get a bit more opportunity to smack.
So it is. I mean, the thing that cricket always reminds me of, apart from just the associations with England and the Edwardian era that it has for me, is it always looks like World War One.
Another one on the head. How many is that in this series? Just chipped a bit off that helmet at the back.
It's a game of attrition.
There's certainly moments at the game where you just dig in.
152 balls it's taken him. 3 hours, 32 minutes of batting.
10 methods of dismissal in cricket. And you know, the most obvious one, if you played cricket at school, is hit the stumps.
Yes.
Now, let's assume you're now throwing that ball at someone who spends 6 hours a day practicing not letting a ball hit the stumps. That's quite hard. So what you have to do is think of, you know, maybe you learn how to bowl the ball so it sort of curls in towards the stumps. So it looks like it's going out and then it comes back in. Or one that goes away from the stumps. So you go, it comes down, it goes away. It comes down, it goes away. And then it comes down and you go to hit it and it stays straight and hits your stumps because you were trying to hit it away. All these strategies. But again, this is making people switch off your podcast, Joel. This is very bad audio. This is not going to win you any awards as Sports Producer of the Year.
I know. I don't know why you're not bringing your A game to this. It feels really, really poor. I was about to say that you're still talking about a thing here, which is one of the essential things that, as a non-sports fan, I find really fascinating about sport, is that it's always about an unstoppable force meeting an immovable object. Unlike me playing any game where one of us might be better than the other one, the deal with professional sport is that it's supposed to be the perfect attack versus the perfect defence.
Yeah.
You're watching marginal advantages, psychology. When you're watching two snooker players, you're looking at people who can definitely clear the table. And the question is, which one of them is going to bottle it first?
Oh, and that's a bad miss.
And you're looking for tiny, tiny advantages because you should have the best bowlers against the best batsmen.
I mean, cricket is perhaps the most ridiculous sport because you can do everything right and still get it.
Yes!
Because how can a bowler bowling a cricket ball know exactly which bit of the ball is going to hit exactly which bit? A fast bowler going at 90 miles an hour, I don't know. But it hits the wrong bit, and a ball that should have gone away, you know, the bowler intended it to go away, suddenly doesn't.
Well, that's the excitement. Watching this innings, the thing that was absolutely superb about it, and we will talk about this piece of narrative because that's how I'm interested in it, is there are constantly moments of complete random chance that go either one way or another and seem to, in this innings, conspire to make the story work.
Yes.
That somehow my brain and my heart and my soul and the crowd put a story onto a random series of collisions of atoms.
Yeah,
that's what you're watching with really good sport. As in, I loved watching how it was conspiring to make the story more exciting, like a screenwriter would do.
Catch!
There's a man back, there's a man back! It's six! It's six!
There's a recurring joke in Ryan George's pitch meeting videos, which is the executive guy says, and why does that happen? the writer guy says, oh, so the movie can happen.
Yes!
So why doesn't the Navy just blow this place up with drones?
Plus, see, there's like GPS blocking and surface-to-air missiles and blind spots. Just the exact circumstances we need to make the movie happen, okay? So just go with it.
Okay, I will.
And it's glib and it's funny, but at the same time, the version of Bond where he gets shot in the first 5 minutes isn't an interesting story. We have to see the story where it deflects off something and he escapes and then he abseils down a cliff on a tank.
You see so many internet videos, especially the new way of criticising something. That would never happen. And you went, and you'd never watch it. You're yearning as a viewer or an audience for a story or a crowd in a football match or a cricket game is so strong that you'll be excited when the story does what you want it to do, no matter how improbable. And the great thing about sport is it was random. No one was forcing this. And that's, I suppose, why people get so annoyed when a decision goes the wrong way or whatever, because one side wants one story and the other side wants the other story. But the side who wants the story that you're watching in this Ben Stokes innings is delighted by the random things falling their way. It's like a run on a roulette wheel. It's astonishingly exciting to watch.
I can't remember whose joke it is, but you never hear a losing Super Bowl quarterback say, well, I guess God didn't want us to win this one.
Yes. There's a bit, one of the commentators says, oh God, even the Australians will be loving this. And you went, no, they won't.
No.
Because their story was the other one, where the guy caught the ball.
As test matches are threatened by all around them, so even that Australian will wake up tomorrow and surely understand that what Stokes has achieved is so special, so unique. It can inspire every young person in the country.
I'm going to say that to go back to the claps, because Bairstow goes out, then Jos Buttler, who's now England's one-day captain, but he's an excellent batsman. you know, he should be expected to be able to stick around with Stokes on this fourth day against tired bowlers. And he gets himself run out.
Oi! Come on!
Oh, now Butler, little slip of the follow through. Oh, no! That is a disaster for Joss Butler and for England. And look what that means for Australia. They're taking a huge stride towards retaining the Ashes now.
Chris Wokes comes in, and he should be expected to do it. And he chips it to mid-wicket.
Another mistake.
You see, I was expecting this to be this astonishing team effort. This would be about the great achievement of England when their backs are to the wall.
Yeah.
And it is, because they hold their nerve, but they keep getting out for naught and out for one. Mm. And you're watching a thing where you're going, hang on, so the odds are slowly more and more against them because they appear to be having a run of terrible luck.
Yeah, well, Chris Wokes chips it to extra cover. Now come the two that annoy me, and they shouldn't because they're both bowlers. But Jofra Archer is a sensational fast bowler. He's one of the most exciting bowlers I've ever seen in action. Just, it's like he's put motion smoothing on. He just like glides up to the wicket and then terrifies batsmen. Oh my God, how did he do that? But he has a slog and he doesn't quite catch it, but he gets away with it.
Yeah.
And then he does it again and he doesn't quite catch it, but he gets away with it. And at that point, I think, like, you sort of go, I've got away with two here. I'm just going to play it safe for a little bit because I didn't. And then he has a slog.
And out.
And gets caught.
Stokes won't be pleased, I don't think. Neither is Archer by the bow of the head.
And then Stuart Broad, who was an excellent all-rounder, in his later career became a specialist bowler. His average before he got a hit on the head in about 2014 for a fastball is way higher. And then he stopped playing so well. Also,
did he get a hit on the head and then change character? Did he become Spanish or something?
Yeah. He's very like posh. Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah. I'm just going, this must work by comedy rules. Have they tried hitting him on the head again, see if he goes back?
That's how he became the Nighthawk. That is genuinely his nickname.
Really?
Because the thing in cricket, the Night Watchman, which is where you've only got a couple of overs to go in the day and you don't want to get a good batsman out. So you send out your worst batsman who can last. And if they get out in the last over of the day, the play's ended.
Yeah.
And then they'll probably get out early the next day. But you've sort of protected one of your good batsmen. Yes. And he was sent out and he just started smacking the ball around. And he said, yeah, no, I'm not the Night Watchman. I'm the Night Hawk.
Amazing. It's choosing your own nickname. Yeah. As we know, it's perilous, but yeah.
Yeah. But he gets out LBW very easily. What you're left with is the one player in the England team who cannot bat.
Right.
Jack Leach cannot bat. He is a spin bowler.
Right.
He looks quite gawky. He plays in glasses.
Right.
And he comes to the crease with England still needing 60-odd runs.
Yeah.
And Ben Stokes, this is the thing, all those numbers that I've thrown at you that your listeners' eyes have glazed over, it comes down to this. Ben Stokes can score these runs.
Yeah.
Jack Leach can't.
Right.
So, what does Ben Stokes do? He farms the strike. What that means is he either hits a boundary, or he takes two runs, or he doesn't take a run. There were many times that you wouldn't have seen.
He's got to keep running to make sure he stays at the crease.
He's
and the
got
other
to
guys
be the
other
person
end.
Facing the bowlers.
Right.
And then fifth, sixth balls of the over, sixth ball over, he will take a single. That's the game.
And now Stokes wants two. Has he found the gap? This is taking us back to the World Cup final and the way he played that situation.
So he's got to avoid getting singles as much as possible because he puts the wrong guy in. And he's got to just hoy that ball to the edge as much as possible.
And he's also been out there. I think he went out at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock the previous day.
So he needs a shave and a bath.
Yeah, so he's been, and he came back in at 11 and he has been out in the middle for the entire day's play. So that's 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon. And he faced 150 deliveries to get his first 50.
Wow.
He doesn't celebrate it because the team is falling apart at this point. He then gets to 100 in 199 balls. It took him 47 balls to get the next 50 because that's the point where he realises, well, if I play it safe, this is the simplicity of the game. If I play it safe, we might still lose. The only way we win this is if I win this.
It really is something. It's game awareness. Well, actually, cricketing intelligence, that's what it is.
That's what the shift was that I noticed. And I suddenly realised, as people were going out for one and naught, and I don't know the history of these guys. When these guys go up to the crease, I assume they're good cricketers because it's the England team. I assume they're all right. They're better than me. And they're just getting, they're getting out in the way I get out. And I'm going, right, okay. So you get to a point where this is the Rambo thing. There is one guy facing them down. And that is mythic. That is your boy's own story dream, that there's one guy who can do it. And also, it'd be better if it's unlikely, he's paired with the least likely guy possible. Right. It's Dan Dare and Digby. He's got a little sort of mole-like assistant, Danger Mouse and Penfold. And I was watching it going, who wrote this? This is classic.
Bangs it in, and Leach is tucked in behind it, resolute.
Even better is that he is paired with the worst batsman, which makes it, effectively, The Last of Us.
Yes.
It's the guy with the guns protecting the guy in glasses who, like, the first ball he faces, he just pads down and doesn't get out. And the Western Terrace rise to their feet in jubilation because he survived. They're not expecting him to score.
If Leach survives this ball. That's missing leg stump. Pitching outside leg stump. Survive it, he does. Stokes will have his moment.
Does he get one run?
He gets one run. It's the run that ties the game. It's the one that draws it level and puts Ben Stokes on strike to hit the winning runs.
Here's the single. Yes, England have tied the match. England have tied the match. And Stokes has the strike.
He's done the thing that happens in a movie where the unlikely sidekick pops the baddie in the back of the head at the crucial moment when they're threatening the hero. And you go, good work, kid. It's that moment.
Jack Leach, you are my hero. The greatest one of all time.
Everything about this follows the narrative of a classic adventure serial.
And it's even before that's happened, with 8 runs needed. So you can get that in 2 shots. 2 fours, you win. With 8 runs needed, I think it's Hazelwood, bowls a ball over the wicket at Jack Leach's legs. Hits his legs. But it very obviously pitches outside the line and hits him outside the line. And in cricketing terms, if you're coming from the leg, that's not out. Right. You know that's not out. I was talking to my wife about this last night. I was going on this podcast, and she said, they must have gone, or maybe it is. But the brilliant thing about cricket is that one of millions of brilliant things about cricket is the decision review system.
Yeah.
And that is high-end technology working out whether the umpires were right. But you get 2 chances.
Yeah.
You can use it twice. Yeah. And if you're wrong twice, you don't get to complain anymore. Yeah. And Australia had already used one, and it's 8 runs to go. It's really tense. Though. And they've hit him on the legs. They know they've hit him on the legs. And the umpire's given it out, and they go, let's review it, just in case.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous, because in cricket, doesn't happen in football with the VAR. I think it should. They have a thing called umpire's call.
Yeah.
Which is basically, we can't prove either way, it's too close.
Yeah.
So we'll just go with what the umpire says.
Yes.
I think it's incredibly respectful.
Back to the old system. This is how the game's always been played.
Absolute howler, you get overturned. If it's not, you know, we'll trust the umpire.
Trust the guy, the way it's always been.
And also, stops you bitching, frankly, because you go, oh, that was, oh, okay, use your review.
Yeah. But they use
their last review.
Yeah.
And will they go for it just as a bit of desperation? Well, they do.
So that, a few balls later, with 2 needed, Nathan Lyon, the spinner, who has already fumbled.
Yeah.
A very easy run out.
No, there's a run out. No way. Oh, dropped it. Oh, Nathan Lyon has dropped it.
The ball comes in. Leach is miles out the ground. He's run down. He's realised too late. He should be out. Nathan Lyon standing at the stumps. Huge experience for
I gasped at that bit. I thought this is all over.
Yeah. And it hits him on the hips, he drops it, and the commentator says,
well, has he dropped the ashes?
But he sends down a ball, Stokes goes to sweep it, and it hits Stokes on the pad. And the umpire says, not out.
Yeah.
Now, reviews have shown it was out.
Yeah.
It was conclusively out. Now, if Australia had a review,
he would have been out.
He would have been out, story's over.
Australia don't have a review left. Well, well.
There is no point in a good drama where you win a comfortable victory.
Yeah.
All has to look like it's lost. That's classic storytelling structure. Yeah. You have to say, I'm at my lowest ebb, and I pull myself up. In mythic storytelling, the hero has to die. There's a death and rebirth.
Yeah.
I read about it in the book. In the two Paddington films, he dies by fire and water at the end. Audience goes, you've killed the bear. Oh, the bear's all right. You have to kill the bear.
Have you not?
And then when a friendly hand comes on and pulls them back up,
yahoo!
It's twice the cheer. Because your second chance is where everyone really cheers.
You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go home.
At that moment, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to do a thing where the engineering of the game means that, well, he should definitely be out. He's definitely dead.
Well, here we go. Impact in line, pitching in line, would have been out.
Mm. This game is over, and a technicality, because they were arrogant enough to use up all their reviews earlier on. They've been killed by their own folly. Not only is he getting away with murder, he deserves to get away with murder because the other guys failed. Everything about it narratively is the perfect hero's death and rebirth. But it's right two runs from the end.
Yeah.
It couldn't come at a better point to be a brilliant story.
There's a thing, in cricket, where, you know, a player might be dropped early on. You know, they're just getting their feet into the ground and they, you know, nick it behind and a slip fielder drops the ball.
Yeah.
And then they go on to score 100. And you say, well, that catch cost them 100 runs.
Yeah.
But it never works the other way. No, if they caught early, they go, well, I saved them 100 runs. So it is the sense of where it happens in the story and what makes this innings so comforting is the fact, like you say, it should have been written and it wasn't. Essentially what you're watching with sport, and this is, I was preparing myself to have to persuade you to care about sport. It's improv.
Yes.
It's all improvised.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is an improvised, chaotic event that is the one I think everyone is hoping for when they go and see improv or sport, that random events will somehow follow a pure constructed narrative, but it's the one you were hoping for.
Here we go then, the scores are level.
Yes!
And I imagine this is affected by the fact that you, as a sports fan, have watched thousands of times where this didn't happen.
Yeah. No, the I mean, Mark Steele had a joke about how we should just make it. Was Mark Steele or Mark Thomas? I know they love it when they get them confused. Just have them walk out into the middle of the pitch, work out who's richest and declare them the winner. Because 99 times out of 100, that's what happens. The thing about with improv is that a good improv game, the audience know what the rules are. Yes. Sometimes the audience know the rules better than the people taking part. Think of Party Guests with Tony Slattery, Whose Line Is Anyway. He didn't know who they were, but the audience did and the other performers did. So that they get to enjoy it knowing what the rules are. Now, when Maidstone go to Ipswich and they're supposed to get beaten and they score.
Yeah.
Well, we all know what the rules are, is that Ipswich now have to score and Maidstone, who are a worse team, have to stop them scoring. And the brutal simplicity of the end of this innings, it is all of Australia, not just the team, the continent, all of Australia against Ben Stokes and his little friend.
Yes. Right?
That's what it is.
Ben Stokes, you beauty!
Because this wasn't even the first time this summer that Ben Stokes had done this.
Right.
The World Cup final against New Zealand a couple of months earlier, before the Ashes had started. Yeah. England had got to the final at Lord's, home tournament, and England were in real trouble. And Ben Stokes got them out, including one incredible moment where Ben Stokes is running back for a run, dives, and the ball being thrown in hits the bat and deflects past the wicketkeeper and goes for a boundary.
Amazing.
And he gets, I think they gave him 6 runs because he'd run 2.
Yeah.
But no one knew what the rules were because that doesn't happen.
Yeah, he's breaking the rules.
Well, this guy is a freak.
Why I think this is exciting, and why I think this is a really good thing to choose to show a non-sports fan, is that a lot of the fun of sport is following it, knowing who all these characters are, knowing their history, knowing their family backgrounds, their failings and their successes, where they've come from, what they're struggling against. Mm. The soap opera.
Yeah, soap opera.
Which I go and see my dad's local football team with him now. We just go down to see non-league football. And he tells me who everyone is. And the game is then brilliant. But I don't know otherwise. The great thing about this is, because everyone else is out for naught, I only need to know who one person is to follow this story.
Yeah.
And it's Ben Stokes, and he appears to be Superman.
He's done it. Incredible. Wait for this signal.
I don't need to know any biography apart from this is an unlikely win. I don't need to know any of the subtleties of it. It is really clear. And the narrative is the perfect sporting narrative in it, in the way that I might enjoy watching a 100 metres final. It's really simple and quick, and it's a dash. I cannot even begin to understand how rich it must be if you know the rest of the story.
Do you know, the other comparison, and this just occurred to me on the way here because it came up on my iPhone, my shuffle, was it's What's Up Danger.
Yes.
From Spider-Man.
Oh, God.
I like high odds that I might lose. Can't stop me now.
He jumps off and he falls upwards.
Yeah, he's not falling, he's climbing.
There's a man back, It's thunders it back down the ground. This is incredible. It's 6-4. No way, man. 100 for Ben Stokes. An all-timer. An innings for the ages. An innings that keeps the Ashes alive.
I think why this works as a piece of terrific sports theatre is that clarity of going, this is impossible. And what you're looking for, and I want to talk to you about this as well, as cricket, as a thing, there's a real sense that I don't necessarily understand sport, but I read a lot of sports books because I find I like them turned into narrative. I always read one of the William Hills if I get the chance to, because they're great. I like it when it's turned via journalism back into narrative.
Mm.
And I really enjoy an underdog sports movie. We all know the rules of an underdog sports movie, whichever form, whether we watch it in spoof form or like dodgeball, or
I
we watch
the
ball.
Could have won the Ashes, but I'm old and wide.
It's totally that thing. It's a real, you've seen it parodied so many times. It's such a solid story, and this has underdog sports movie shape to it. Mm. In that I understand that it's against all the odds. It shouldn't be happening, and it's that once in a lifetime impossible moment.
Big shout of catch it and a big mow down the ground. And a 6.
Everyone's reaction, the crowd's reaction, the commentator's reaction explains to me that this is an underdog thing. And what fascinates me about cricket is that we invented it, the English, gave it to everyone else, and then have really enjoyed being terrible at it since then, because we're not meant to win. Would this be any fun if we were an astonishing, always winning team? Would you feel anything? If we were the Brazil, the football Brazil of cricket, I don't think anyone in England would enjoy cricket. We have to go out there going, we're not going to win.
And I have to say, we did get to number one in the World Test rankings in about 2013 because we went to Australia and beat them in Australia.
Did that spoil everything? Was that rubbish?
It happened over there, so people didn't pay attention. I think we quite enjoyed it. I think there's a thing with sports fans, and it's normally Newcastle. They go, you know, if they were going through the doldrums, they'd go, you know, I'm not saying we want to win the league, but we want to have a team we can be proud of.
Yeah.
And then they get some exciting football and don't win, and they go, well, we should have won the league. Yeah, and I support Leeds United, and we had a manager called Marcelo Bielsa who radically transformed my approach to sport, because he took a team that had finished 13th in the championship, like 3 years running, 12th, 13th. Yeah. We were a mid-table, added a couple of players, but then made them work harder than any other team and turned turn them into a team. It wasn't 11 players.
Yeah.
And I think that the remarkable thing about Stokes, it does come down to one batsman trying to outwit one bowler.
Isn't it wonderful to play cricket and be a cult figure, loved by the crowd?
England are getting bowled out all the time. So increasingly, it's coming down to you thought you had a big team. It felt a bit like, was that the bit in Deadpool where he puts together a team and they just all get killed almost immediately? It felt like a superhero gang that you're going to be left with. You're going to build up the super team and they're just going to get shot immediately.
Stuart Broad parachuting into a wood chipper.
Yeah, it's total, it's a Rob Delaney level of like chaotic comedy and leaving one person left. That feels underdoggy. Everything about this feels underdoggy. And I think, I mean, I may be wrong about this. As an outsider, I think cricket and England cricket has underdog baked into it from the beginning. We gave you this game and you keep beating us at it.
Yeah.
I understood that culturally from my background that when I watched this England innings, it would be starting from the point of, well, we're definitely going to fail.
Their dream was to compete in the Olympics. But they chose a sport they knew nothing about.
Cricket crowds are also really fun to be part of. My wife and I went to see what turned out to be the last day of an England-India test at the Southampton Rose Bowl. I heard a heated conversation between an India fan wearing an India shirt and an England fan in an England shirt, both explaining why their team was going to lose.
Wow!
And the India guy was going, I just, you know, our batsmen, like, I don't think we can hang on for a day and a half. And the England guy goes, we're never going to get Kohli out. We're never going to... And then Sam Curran ran through the
You're building that narrative. You're building yourself in a position where you will, if they do well, be the most excited you can be. Yeah. And I feel that that's with casual fans or people who only want to support a winning team or get on board with a football team when they're doing really well are missing out that feeling that most sports fans I know have got, which is they've been there through the bad times. They know how bad the team can be. The start of this narrative has to be underdog.
Yeah, no Manchester United fan will ever understand how good getting promoted from the Championship felt for Leeds fans.
Yeah.
Because we'd been out of the Premier League for 16 years.
You've got to be washed up as Rocky. You've stuck. Got to be punchy.
We play to score goals. And if we concede goals, we'll just have to score more. And the petty rivalries of football, it had actually become an object attempt to do something, I think, with sincerity. The Leeds team played with sincerity. Like Bielsa would fine players for play acting.
Yeah.
We're not here to cheat. We're here to play. And we conceded a lot of goals and didn't win games because other teams were on the ground pretending to be injured, rounding down the clock. And we did not do this. There's an amazing story about Bielsa. I don't know if it's true, but on the first day, he sent the first team squad out with litter pickers and made them pick litter for an amount of time. And then when he came back, he said, that's how hard the fans had to work to afford a ticket.
Brilliant.
Let's make it worth their while.
So you want, as well as the narrative and the underdog, you want a narrative of heroism, of
and
goodness,
sincerity,
a fair play,
everything,
the best things that sport can be. This is just going to be sensational. Again, narrative, storytelling, sport as drama.
Yeah, well, there's a sort of sophology, if you like, to sport. So Australia went to Pakistan and they did the sensible thing. Knowing they had a better side,
they
ground out. First couple of tests, really ground it out. Just
get the results, but no fun to watch.
Don't make any mistakes. Just keep the thing, tire them out. And the third match, the Pakistani team were knackered. England went there and beat them in 3 days. They just went, do you know what? This pitch is going to be really hard to get them out. So let's give ourselves as much time to do that as possible. So we're going to have to score really quickly. So we're just going to slog the ball around. So Bazball is named after Brendan McCullum, who became coach of England when Ben Stokes became captain, which is a couple of years after this, that hadn't happened yet. And the idea is, instead of worrying about not losing, you try to win.
It's been tossed out wide by Lyon. He's put everything into this. Ben Stokes, and over it goes.
It's fun, isn't it? Might not knock off 56 more to win, but it's fun while it's going on.
And in the first series against New Zealand, which was Johnny Bairstow really, I think in that summer he averaged 90. Like, he was incredible.
To unlock something, a different style of play.
They were talking, they had one afternoon. So it was the last afternoon of the series, or the test. And it was Trent Bridge. And apparently they said, oh, so what do we do if we lose a wicket? He called us all in and went, if we go for the draw... Mm. We won't win.
Yeah.
If we go for the win, we might.
Right.
So what's the point of grinding out a draw because we definitely won't win. So let's go for the win. And if we lose, we try to win.
Keep your cool, Ben. 9 to win.
Well, that sort, that attitude, that mental attitude, that sort of spiritual attitude, I'm going to go back to underdog sports movies. Yeah. We've got nothing to gain by being careful. We have nothing to lose by giving it the best shot we can. And that is why you watch underdog sports movies, for that moment where the coach says that. When I was reading up what Bazball was, and they were struggling to actually express it as anything other than not be boring, or try and make it as exciting as a non-cricket fan would hope this would be to watch, try and win the game. What they were talking about then was how I would write a cricket match. Mm. You would write it with spirit and pluck and aiming to win, knowing that you had nothing to lose, which is the underdog position, because no one's expecting anything of you.
And it becomes fascinating to watch. You know, runs change games, wicket changes games. Wickets made Ben Stokes focus more.
Yeah.
But with every run that went off the target, you could see the Australians going, oh, we might lose this.
Yeah.
We might. How do we stop them? What do we do? And it's that sort of, I think it's just the absolute, Bazball, the absolute sincerity of, look, your best 11 versus our best 11. Let's see.
Yeah.
And we're not going to, you know, mess around with mind games. We're not going to try and cheat you. I have a thing with football about, I don't mind if you're a hard tackler who fouls people. And I sort of don't mind if you dive. So like Jack Grealish has a thing where he just goes down under the slightest touch and it really annoys me. It normally is a foul, but he just like collapses to the ground. The players that I hate are the players who both kick people really hard and go down really easily. It's like, no, pick one.
Yeah, you're because either hard as nails or a gossamer.
Your cynicism is working overtime. And if your cynicism is in one thing, which is I'm going to like clump them and then they're going to not want to jump against me again. Or it's, I'm going to go down if they push me and then they won't push me again. If your cynicism is working in one way, it's bearable within the context of a wider game. But if your cynicism is working both ends, fuck off out of football.
You can't be a bully and a victim.
Cry bully. They're cry bullies, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. It's the worst
combination. You know, there's a place for you on GB News and not at Elland Road.
Is there something in this that is just about that sincerity?
Mm.
And it's an unarguable innings of sincere sport.
Yeah.
I mean, you showed it to me as an example. So look, I will show this to you and you'll get this. And I was delighted to find out it was so easy to read and so easy to enjoy. It is great. Was it 20 minutes? It's great fun.
Yeah.
It was a great 20 minutes of drama. And I really did sense that I was missing the big build-up. I'm watching the car chase on the Italian Job and I haven't earned that car chase.
There's 3 days of play before this.
Again, I can barely sense.
18 hours.
I can barely sense what the elation must be like at the end of that thing. But even on its own, you can see it because it appears to be sincere and genuine. And it appears to be about someone finding a story they didn't expect to be in. It's a hero's story.
Catch!
And he'd possibly do it single-handedly. The quick single! And he's home!
Ben Stokes is a player who got dropped from the England team for disciplinary play. He got involved in a fight in a nightclub and got dropped from the team.
The jury believed Stokes' version of events and unanimously found him not guilty of a fray. Stokes maintained throughout. He stepped in after hearing a gay couple he'd already met being abused by two other men.
He once broke his hand punching a locker after getting out in a final. And, you know, it's a redemption arc to become captain. But as captain, you know, new ball comes in, you've got 80 overs with it.
Yeah.
And depending on what's happened, the last 20 overs of that might not be any fun for the bowlers. You know, you're sort of chucking it down as fast as you can. It's not picking up speed. It's not skidding off the surface. It's not spinning if the conditions are wrong. And so you're just leaking runs and you're wearing out your bowlers. And he's an all-rounder. He picks up the ball and he bowled, I think, 14 overs on the spin. But he just went to his bowlers, his frontline bowlers, take a break, get your energy up. I'm giving you the new ball.
Right.
And until then, I am going to do the hard yards for you.
Yeah.
Because that is leadership.
Right.
Leadership is not persuading other people to do things for you. Leadership is setting an example. Not particularly in bowl this way, this is how I want you to bowl. He went, it is best for the team.
I will take one for the team.
Yeah. And the other players saw him doing that. They saw him putting in the effort.
Right.
He wasn't blaming, you know, if we're leaking runs, it's my fault. I need to set the field right. you know, sort of, and taking that responsibility. And so that arc that Stokes has been on, you know, he's a New Zealand born sort of enfant terrible, grew up in the northeast around rugby, his dad's a rugby league player. So there's this whole sort of, you know, that lad sporting culture that he grew up in. You know, he's a fast bowler who tend to be a bit more on the wild side than batsmen. Weird thing in English cricket, batsmen are privately educated southerners and fast bowlers are working class.
I heard this. I got you'll love this because of where this came from. I like cricket enough to say I'll go and see it. I went with Ben Wilbond to Arundel for a beautiful day out where he was in the actors team playing the authors team. And my God, that's a lovely day out. And basically, I was the only person not playing, so I just sat under a marquee and watched some cricket for the whole day. Beautiful. And afterwards, I was talking to the actor's fast bowler. Everyone else, very posh, privately educated. This guy, clearly not. And I said, what's the deal? Because I don't know this. And he said, oh, yeah, fast bowlers, always working class. He said, it's the blacksmith, the policeman. I went, yes, in P.G. Woodhouse, when I read the books, there's always a big policeman.
Was you addressing me, miss?
Yes, I was, Constable Oates. That ball you got Mr. Pinker out with was a no ball.
Well, miss, why was that?
Because it was.
He said, because you need equipment to practice being a batsman, but everyone can throw a turnip.
Yeah.
And this is a guy, big unit, he was in Game of Thrones and things, and he went, I'm that guy. And I watched him bat, and he was like solid, but unremarkable batsman. But he was like a tank, a howitzer. He put something in his hand, and he went, this is the tradition. He said, I come from a different background than those guys, and I can throw something at you that will kill you.
Yeah,
there's all these subtleties of the history of it going, it's different classes getting together on the village green to work together.
Gentlemen and players.
Yes, very much.
If you really loved me, you'd do something about that man.
What do you mean, do something?
Steal his helmet.
Well, you're saying that here that Ben Stokes has got an arc here where not only does he step up and become the hero of this story, but he's kind of, in inverted commas, an unlikely hero. He's got things to battle. He's got things to prove. And that the team will be happy for him to step up for that moment because he's earned it.
Yeah, but at the same time, like I say, he's already done this once this summer. Mm. So that adds to it of, he can't do this twice.
Right.
You can't. You can't do this twice. And Australia must be going, no, he's doing to us what he did to New Zealand.
Oh, wait a minute. Is this catchable? It is catchable. It's dropped. Very difficult.
The unlikely hero thing. You can feel that with him. I was reading up about him this morning and he's talked very openly about mental health and things like that. He's obviously had an amazing journey.
He took a break from the England team for, I think it was nearly a year. Just, he said, I'm, you know, not up to it at the moment.
Which is, I don't know, maybe that's my prejudice against sport. It doesn't appear to be a very macho bit of heroism. It looked like he was just digging in, being brilliant, responding to it. And I liked him.
Yeah. And I think both Beelzebul with football and Bazball with cricket speak to people who are interested in winning the right way.
Yeah.
And I think stigmatizing people with mental health issues is, you know, in the 70s or 80s, we all remember the headline about Frank Bruno.
Yeah.
The Sun printed and then had to pull and change because they called him a loony or something.
Yeah.
And then suddenly realised the general population was against them. But you can imagine the 70s, you know, we need tough characters. We need mental strength.
Women can talk, men don't talk. Men are macho and don't want to admit that they're going through a mental health. But women, you not disrespectfully, you women can talk.
We can talk.
I hate the term mental strength. I prefer the term focus. You look at Ben Stokes in that innings, he is absolutely focused.
Yes.
The strength or weakness of his mental health is not the issue. It's, can he focus on the ball coming down from Josh Hazlewood or Pat Cummings? And there was a cricketer called Jonathan Trott, who was an amazing number three batsman. The amazing thing about Jonathan Trott is he was able to forget about the last ball.
Right.
He never got pulled into any traps. He just, like, every ball on its own merits. And then, after 5 years of relentless touring, England play more cricket than any other test nation, he just lost that ability to focus. He started thinking about the last ball. And, you know, he got caught out on a short ball. So he was like, right, I'm going to hit the next short ball. And he got caught. And every bowler in the world just went, oh, that's how you get him. And he retired not long after because he'd lost that ability. I mean, he'd had a fantastic career, but he couldn't, as I saw it, focus on the game like he'd been able to.
There's a wisdom in this. There's a sort of life wisdom in this that is really worth learning from. Is what I was watching when I watched this innings was someone in the moment.
Mm.
That the previous ball didn't matter. The next ball didn't seem to matter. They're thinking strategically because he's playing cricket. It's a strategic game. But it seemed to be, because it is also not only a strategic game that is days long, weeks long, careers long, so you're constantly aware of long spans of time. At any moment, it's just a ball bouncing. You've got to be able to just quickly respond to a random action. And he appeared to be completely beautifully in the moment with no regrets or anticipation in a way that you can learn from as a human being, which is you can only ever be in the moment. You can only ever, that's one of the pieces of advice you give to people who are suffering with mental health problems. You have to live now. Can you do the next 10 steps, the next 30 seconds? I'm watching sport, something which, as far as I'm concerned, knowing you and my friends who are big sports fans, is about lifelong commitment, really understanding the past, everyone's stats, big books of wisdom, cricket stats, owning like a massive sense of the length of time. But actually, all it ever comes down to is, can this person focus and live in the moment and forget the brawl in the nightclub, the shame, the tabloid pressure, the nation watching, what happened a second ago? And it's an astonishing demonstration of mental strength that I think most of us struggle with.
And I think Laura Lex said the fantastic thing about cricket is that, you know, if the ball's down one end of the pitch in football, you know there's not going to be a goal at the other end. But cricket resets six times and over. Yeah. Every ball has the opportunity to be everything. It could be a wicket, it could be a six, it could be a four. And in the middle, after a day and a half, and after every ball, Ben Stokes is looking around going, well, I know the bowler is Nathan Lyon, so he's a spin bowler. So he's not going to chuck it down fast. He's going to try and twist it one way or the other, or maybe make it look like it's going to spin and then not. What are my options here? Well, there's no man over there. So if I hit this over there,
yeah,
I'm going to be fine. But what if the ball doesn't go there? And there's a range of options for every ball. And he kept making the right choice. Yeah. Just every ball after ball for 219 balls.
The right decision.
The right decision.
He's in the moment, which I suppose is the dream of all sport, to be in that moment with one of my favourite songs, Fountains of Wayne's All Kinds of Time. The moment where time just slows down, and at any moment in a game where a ball is just bouncing past you, to be able to judge, to be like in that car crash matrix bullet time, to go, I've made the right decision. And that's what you're watching when you're watching a really fine sportsman. They appear to be reacting in suspended time to know exactly where to put the ball. And that can be compared to your own life. I've spent the whole time panicking about what happened a minute ago, where I'm meant to be in a minute. But the great thing about watching a really fine sportsman is they're not in anything other than exactly the right place, and they know exactly where to put the ball to get the result they want. If I could do that, I'd be unbeatable. It is like superheroic.
He's walking away from an explosion without looking back.
100%.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
The players at Leeds United, I'm on a couple of like mailing lists for fans and WhatsApp groups. And we've got this nickname. We've got a winger called Dan James, whose nickname on the WhatsApp is SDJ, which stands for Shit Dan James, because he kept missing goals. Yeah. This season, he scored 10, and he set up about another 10. So when he scores, we just go, oh, Shit Dan James again. But it's got what genuinely Bielsa stopped me doing was stopped thinking of players being shit, because any player you see in professional capacity is a million times better. It's one of the reasons I struggled with Ted Lasso, is because I watch a lot of real football, and those guys, they're pretty good for actors, but they would bounce off a real footballer, and it's not even close. All fake football struggles with not being fast enough, because what they can do at speed. And what watching Bielsa's team do is you start looking at football the way it appears to the players. Like, not, why did you miss that? You're shit. You're a shit striker because you missed that. Why did you take that shot? Oh, it's because that person was blocked off and that person. And so it was either stop the attack or take the shot. And it's the decision-making process. And you realise that sportsmen, sportswomen, sportspeople experience the game differently to the fans. And nothing sums that up than the moment, the walking away from an explosion moment without looking back, right at the end of the match, game's tied, Ben Stokes carves the ball away for four runs. His hands are in the air celebrating. He is roaring in jubilation before the fans have realised what's happened.
Wow.
Here we go then. The scores are level. Yes!
Because they're following the ball. He's already looked over there. He knows there's no player. He knows how hard he's hit that ball. He knows where all the Australian cricketers are. He knows there's no way they're getting that. And, you know, players have been caught out in the past. There was, who was it? That was Ian Bell, who hit the ball and assumed it went for four and then went, you know, as the ball was out of play, walked down to the middle of the pitch to talk to the person he was playing with, and the ball hadn't gone over the boundary. So the Indians threw it back and stumped him. And it's like, well, what? But that was, so it's not like we don't know what's happened, but he's just gone, I've won. I've won. And you see the Western Terrace rise behind him as they realise. But he saw that game totally different. Yet if you'd stuck a GoPro to his helmet, I would not have watched that 18 minutes.
No, you don't want to be in there. You want to be watching fast. But it's got that flamboyance and that swashbuckling nature that it's when you watch Hawkeye in an Avengers film fire an arrow over his shoulder and take the henchman out. Because he knows where he was.
Best shot you ever took?
The one I didn't take.
It's Ripley throwing the basketball. Yeah.
They're thinking at a different pace than you. You're watching it as a piece of entertainment. Mm. They're watching it as the people who are making that entertainment. But it is so entertaining. And I think as an example of how sport can transcend the grind of just following a team and learning all the stats to go, this is just showbiz. This looked like showbiz.
There is a huge soap opera element to sport. Which, you know, I hold a grudge against Chelsea for something that happened in a match 9 years before I was born. I've just inherited that. There's a Leeds.
You're putting the hours in.
There's a fantastic Leeds United podcast, which I cannot sincerely recommend unless you already support Leeds, but it's one of the best podcasts I've heard, called The Square Ball. And they hold a grudge against Port Vale because Port Vale took Leeds City's place in the Football League when Leeds City were kicked out in 1917.
The tribal thing, I think, is almost a block to anyone who's outside sport. The tribalism, because the whole point is it's a tribe. You will have your own languages. That's why the podcasts do so well and the message boards and people love that. The involvement and the sense of history and a shared thing. You're working all together. I love the way that, and I did a sketch for Mitchell and Webb about it, the way you use the word we. You weren't on any of those pitches, but we. We won. We won the FA Cup. We beat.
Was that your sketch? I did not know that was you.
We're going to trolley you in the league.
We? You weren't on the pitch either. As far as I know, you were in the back bar of the Red Lion watching a game on the television with your mother.
But I think it combines that with the pure drama, the pure narrative that this innings can show you, that even outside that loyalty and that tribalism, that sense of soap opera and history and stats and statistics, what you're aiming for is these moments which are, for a non-sports fan, you can't argue with that.
I did a show with John Harvey a couple of years ago, which I think is still on BBC Sound, called Sudden Death, which is about his brother died tragically young. And a few days after he died, his Crystal Palace season ticket came through the post. And John couldn't bear the thought of the seat being empty.
Yeah.
So he went, even though he's a Spurs fan, he went to every home game that he could get to so that his brother's seat was being used. And then it come to the end of the season and he's going, well, do I have to renew it now? Is this now, am I now a Palace fan? And then some tickets for the Olympics that he and his brother had ordered started falling. And he was like, my brother loves sport. I'm going to go and see.
Yeah.
It's been turned into a book called And For All Seasons. But there was a line in the show. He said, the story of sport, which all of us are privileged enough to see part of, but none of us can hope to see all of. And, you know, the comedy version of that is Mitchell and Webb's There's Everything to Play For and Forever in Which to Play It.
Watch it all here, all the time, forever. It will never stop. The football is officially going on forever. It will never be finally decided who has won the football. Is still everything to play for and forever to play it in. So that's the football coming up. Watch it. Watch the football. Watch it. Watch it. It's going to move. Watch the football. It's football.
Is why you're part of a bigger story than just your own life.
But it's also why, you know, women's football didn't get attention for ages. And then they just decided to put on telly. We're just going to put it on telly. And the first season, you go, well, who are these people?
Yeah.
I don't know who they are. And then by the third season, you're going, oh, God, no, she's great. She's great. She's going to make a really good addition to this Chelsea team. And I can't believe Man United let her go. And that you're in the soap opera part of it. And I think that's the thing, the all-conquering teams, that they have nothing but riches. There's the Leeds United club song is called Marching On Together, and I think it marks out why Leeds is a remarkable club, because the opening line is, we've been through it all together and we've had our ups and downs, but we're going to stick with you forever, at least until the world stops spinning round. And as far as I know, no other club acknowledges their failures in the opening
couplet.
You're
about to say that, but you know what the football song is. It's Three Lions.
Yeah.
And it's about victory against the odds of defeat.
Everyone seems to know the score. They've seen it all before. They just know, they're so sure that England's gonna throw it away, gonna blow it away.
We are a nation that loves its darkest hours. We love a story where we're an underdog, because that gives you some narrative. And the only with any sports fan, and being part of a much bigger story, is even if you win this week, there's a bigger story than that. It's not over. If sport was amazing for moments like this, it would just be films.
Yeah.
And the fact that sport is bigger than that, and you are interested in the longer story, that's a unique thing about it.
If improv was as good as that, we wouldn't need scripts.
Yes, exactly. As a writer, I find the fact that sport can be this dramatic annoying. But I think what you're saying there is that it is about a longer story. It is about investing. It's about the time you spend with it and the loyalty and the heart and the spirit you give it, which is how all sports fans talk about it, that it's not about the ups, it's about the downs. And it's about coming from that underdog position to have these moments of triumph. And I think that's maybe what non-sports fans don't understand, is that when it's terrible, that's the point.
Yeah. So we'll finish with a Lawrence and Gus quote from one of my favourite sketches of theirs, is, it doesn't matter who you support, all that matters is that they make you miserable.
And that is your comfort, because that will always be there for you. Well, anyway, I hope Leeds continue to make you miserable. That's all I can wish you. I wish you misery in your support of your various teams and endeavours. That was brilliant. Thank you for bringing on Ben Stokes, doing some cricket.
Headingley 2019.
Wonderful. I recommend watching it. It's really good.
Over the past few years, to the traditional sounds of an English summer, the drone of lawnmowers, the smack of leather on willow, has been added a new noise.
Show me the outfield from a zeppelin. Show me the coin toss that we never win. Peruse the paper, sip some Earl Grey tea, and let the test match special set you free.
What an innings, what a player. Take a bow, Ben Stokes. The Ashes well and truly alive because of one cricketer, and that cricketer is Benjamin Stokes.
Comfort Blanket was presented and produced by Joel Morris for the Cheese and Pickle family of podcasts. Find us on social media and don't forget to like and subscribe.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.